Welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. How many ways can your identity be stolen? Today, we'll count the ways. And once your identity has been acquired by thieves, what's your next step? That's our topic today. It's a problem in Alaska, and it's a problem across the country. Here to help us sort through it are two fabulous and very savvy guests. Right now in the studio with me, I have Michelle Logan, a detective with the APD Financial Crimes Unit. Michelle, welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Thank you.
And we will be joined later in the show by Glenn Glinkart, former APD cyber cop and now an information security consultant. And we hope we'll be hearing from you. Did you confront an identity theft event in your own life? What did you do about it? We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear your stories. And I'm going to give you our phone numbers so you can join in the conversation right away. You can call us at 550-8433. If you're outside of Anchorage, you can call us at 1-888-353-5752. And we can welcome your email to hometown@alaskapublic.org. And we already have an email in the queue, but we're going to save that for a little bit later. And we're going to start with Michelle. Michelle, I believe when I met you, you said you've been doing work like this for about 2 decades?
Well, I've been with the Anchorage Police Department for a little over 20 years. And for the last 13 years, I've been a detective in the Financial Crimes Unit.
So 13 years.
13 years, yeah. Doing this. Matter of fact, I went into the Financial Crimes Unit in March of 2002, like the 1st of March, and by mid-April had my first identity theft case. It was three people. It was a mother and a daughter. They're Canadian nationals, and their boyfriend. They came from Las Vegas and were making counterfeit checks. They had the stolen ID of a woman in North Las Vegas. The lady had worked at the postal service, had gone into the Palace Station to cash her paycheck. And this is around 2002, like I said.
Yeah.
Cashed her paycheck and must have left her ID at the counter. Oh. And they got a hold of it. It was back when you had the laminated IDs where you could split it slide a new picture in there. This woman used her name, and they came up to Alaska. In the space of 2 weeks, did about $68,000 in purchasing things from small merchants and stores here in Alaska. And we actually caught them after doing over 100,000 in Vegas. That's small potatoes in Vegas where you have the big casinos. But here in Alaska, 2 weeks with our small merchants all up at arms, we finally got a license plate because we had lots of video of them, but we didn't know who they were because she had a fake name. But we finally had a merchant get a license plate, and our patrol officers found the vehicle, and we were able to do a search warrant and take all the merchandise and the furniture and pool tables, everything that they had purchased, washers and dryers,
wow,
treadmills, and were able to seize all that those things back.
Well, would you say it's been on, like, 2002, was that a new unit that you had joined then, or was that an existing unit? I mean, I'm trying to get at, when did we see the identity theft go up? I mean, we've always had identity theft.
Well, our unit, we investigate embezzlements and credit card fraud and check fraud rings and those types of things and other frauds. But identity theft falls under that. So we have done some cases over the years. So where did we see identity theft pick up? There's always been a sort of, it's been around where people have taken over other people's identity. You go back to the movie Catch Me If You Can. Mm-hmm. You had Frank Abagnale Jr., but of course he was taking on, sometimes identity theft is not just taking on an actual person, but taking a fake name. And it, the merchants and people like that are the ones that suffer at that point. But, you know, I had a quote in the Anchorage Daily News. We had some mail theft back in around 2005 where the criminals were stealing mail here in Anchorage, and we still have that problem today. They had actually pried open the back of one of the community mailboxes.
With all bunches of them.
Uh-huh. Since they couldn't get in the front where the locks were, they pried off the back, and they had access to what, you know, 30.
Hundreds, yeah, maybe 30, 40, 50.
And they were stealing the mail, and the case got some attention with the newspaper, and they called me up, and they had quoted me at that time. And I had been across the country seeing identity theft in other parts of the country. At that time, in 2002, 3, 4, 5, it was largely connected to methamphetamine trade.
Okay.
And they would, they called them tweakers, and they would steal mail and make fake checks and purchase things. And so I had been hearing about it, and I quoted, I said, you know, we don't really see it, but when methamphetamine makes its way up the pipeline from Washington and Oregon to Alaska, we're going to see it. And sure enough, by about 2006, 2007 is when we started to see some large check rings. And what they would do is they use fake IDs, steal people's information from the mail, make an ID, a fake check, and an ID to match that check, and then go out and purchase all kinds of things, and then resell them on Craigslist or eBay at the time.
Right.
And the problem for the individual is they would log on to their, like you probably do every day, they logged on to their banking site, and there would be five checks that had been cleared. They might have been overdrawn, or, you know, where did the $5,000 just go? And they'd look at the image of the check and say, that's not my check. That I didn't write that check. That's not my signature. That's my name. That's my account number. And so it's basically hijacking their account. So that we've seen quite a few of those types of rings over the years.
So check rings. That's interesting. You know, something that might be useful is to talk about all the places we're vulnerable for this. I mean, it's essentially your identification, you know, your personal identification that gets assumed by somebody else. It could be your social security number, but it could be your bank checkbook. It could be your, you know, any credit card you have. You know, I was thinking to myself, getting ready for the show, man, I'm just going to start using cash all the time. But that's sort of burdensome. It's so much easier to use a credit card. So we're almost victims of our convenience. You know, we're exposing ourselves. So I kind of wanted to talk. I don't know that everybody's aware of all the ways that they might be exposing themselves. And I'd sort of like to run down a list of that for people. You know, I have some ideas, but you may have some ideas. Things I've heard of, you know, giving any information over the phone. Is really, just don't do it, right? That the phone, you never know who's on the other end of the phone. Another one I've been reading about is e-filing your tax return. And I read that there is actually a correlation between people who file online and what they're seeing in terms of identity theft. And so that's, you know, just another, you may be so proud you're getting your taxes done on time, but you may be exposing yourself doing that. And if you have any information about that, let's talk about that. Heard about stolen PayPal accounts. Just sites that ask you for more information than they really need about you, whether that's a school or an employer. If they're keeping that information around, you might want to be wary of that. Bogus job offers is another one I read about where you might put a lot of information down in a job application that might not even be for a real job. I mean, you know, so wariness of how much you use your personal information. So what do you think about that, Michelle? Any of those ring a bell for you?
How long do we have today?
Well, we got at least an hour.
Okay. So you've heard the commercial, I think it's Capital One, what's in your wallet?
Uh-huh.
Okay, and that's just asking what credit card do you have in your wallet. But my question is, what is in your wallet? Okay, I carry my driver's license. I have a small little wallet, a business card, and a debit card, and that's it. If I'm going to go make a purchase where I will need a credit card, I have to physically go back to my house. Now, traveling is a different thing, but here... Yeah. Just here every day in Anchorage, I have to go back to my house and get the credit card to go use the credit card to make a purchase. I just don't carry anything in my wallet, especially your Social Security card. I give a lot of talks and classes, and I'll say, don't raise your hand, but how many of you have your Social Security card in your wallet? And I'll see these faces, kind of people like a little sheepish look. And I said, don't do that. Take it out of your wallet. Only carry the cards. You don't need to have 15 of your credit cards with you when you're going to work and then you're going to lunch and you might leave your wallet somewhere or, you know. And so that's where I would start, is what are you carrying around with you on a regular basis, especially. And then when I travel, hopefully I try to get hotels that have a safe.
And you use it.
And I only carry out what I need at the time, too.
Yeah.
I don't carry all the credit cards. So passwords, password protection, memorize your passwords. And I know even at my job, we have so many databases that we have to have passwords, and they all have different criteria for how you have to make your password. And it's like, how can you possibly keep up with all these passwords? And
oh my gosh,
and
yeah.
You have your little list inside your drawer or on your calendar, and everybody knows they can go there and get in your website or your database. But as much as possible, I even memorize I have separate credit cards for If I'm going to go to Mexico and rent a car, I use a separate credit card from everything else I'm going to do, because I'm leaving that information at a rental car place in Mexico for a week or two.
Okay.
And, you know, what if I need my card for something else, an emergency to get out of the country to buy a plane ticket? I don't want to have the one credit card that I'm going to use for everything all exposed.
Okay, targeted use of your credit card. If you're
what you get a credit card that you only use for online all your online purchases. I use a certain card, and that's the only one I use.
You don't use it at local merchants at all.
No.
That way you're getting a pipeline, basically. You're a channel. You got channels for your credit cards. So if something goes awry.
But there's a lot of different things that you can do. It's mostly common sense and just information awareness of your personal information. I've even memorized one of the credit cards that I use online.
Mm-hmm.
So I know the 3-digit code and the expiration date.
But if you enter it, isn't that the same as losing it? I mean,
if you enter it on a site that's not secure, but like I said, if you minimize it to one credit card that you're always using online, if it's hacked, you only have one credit card to worry about. You
right.
don't have all kinds of credit cards out there,
yeah.
numbers for different things out there. So
I like that one. I like that one a lot. I'm not doing that.
And then the obvious things are never give out your personal information over the phone or on the internet, especially if you didn't initiate the call and know who you're calling. And we do so much education. Don't click on those links. The IRS will never send you an email about your taxes.
Yeah.
You always get the envelope in the mail, the kind that makes your heart drop when you receive it. You open up the mailbox and there's a letter from the IRS. But unless you contact the IRS at their official numbers on their website, just don't give out personal information. But every single day we see it where people have clicked on a link or they thought it was their bank. Anybody can take the letterhead or the symbol for Wells Fargo and paste it onto their email and send it out, make it look official. Guarding your trash, people think, well, you know, they hear get a cross cut shredder, not just the line shredder, and they think, well, who's gonna tape a bunch of lines together? Well, the Iran hostage situation, you know, they were trying to figure out where these people were. They were taping. They had people taping them together.
Yeah.
We've done search warrants where we found shredded paper where if you're on meth, you're awake 23 hours a day.
Right.
And what are you going to do?
You got to put
so you got to do something. So you're going to tape
paper
shredded paper back together. So it can happen. So yeah. It's
so
very
you do
important.
Say a cross shredder is a good idea.
Correct.
Okay.
And your mail, outgoing mail. Like I said, we do have quite often reports of stolen mail in Anchorage, around even in the valley where mailboxes are unsecure. The unsecured type. I even at my house, I have the wonderful American mailbox with the flag. And,
yeah.
But that's not secure. And if I'm going to put something in there to mail, I don't.
I don't
either.
I take it to the post office.
And, you know, back 2 years ago at Christmas, you think, well, I'll put it in the blue box outside the mailbox and it's safe. Well, we had they were addicted to drugs and they were taking a pickup truck and chaining up against the blue mailboxes and pulling them off the bolts.
That was over by Aurora Village, wasn't it?
Correct.
Yeah.
It was Christmas Eve because the postal inspectors came to me on Christmas Eve and I helped them write some warrants for some forged checks that came out of the mailboxes.
Wow.
And they did catch the people, but I started taking them inside at that point. But, you know, the mail, the Postal Service does their due diligence to be as safe as they can with the mail. But once you put something in a mailbox and you leave it there with the flag up, you're just saying, hey, there's something in here that's going out.
Right. Even incoming bills. I mean, your credit card could be on your bill, right? I mean,
right. You need to pretty much be aware when to expect things if you're going to receive them in an unsecure mailbox. If you go out of town, put a hold on your mail.
Yeah,
and those sorts of things. Yes.
I'm going to throw out our numbers here again for. And if you just joined us, I'm talking with Michelle Logan. She's a detective with the Financial Crimes Unit at APD, and we are talking about identity theft. And if you've had this experience, we'd really like to hear your story because I think stories resonate and remind people of what they don't want to do. So give us a call at 550-8433. Or 1-888-353-5752, or you can send us an email to hometown@alaskapublic.org. So your wish for everybody would be just a giant dose of common sense, right?
I'm a big proponent of common sense.
Yeah. I mean, I actually, this idea of what's in your wallet is really good for me because I used to think, well, good, I've got all my credit cards in one place. But that's making them very available to somebody if I lose my wallet.
I've had a citizen bring me a purse that they found, and luckily it was an honest citizen. They brought me this purse, and the person's four kids' birth certificates were in there. Their passport was in there.
Oh, my gosh.
Credit cards. I could not believe the things that were in this purse.
Wow. Her whole life was in that purse.
You don't need to carry your whole life around with you.
We have a caller. I'm going to welcome Denise. Welcome to Hometown Alaska, Denise.
Hello. Hi. Thank you.
Yes.
Recently, not too long ago, a couple of months ago, I had my credit card was all of a sudden being used in New York. It was never stolen or anything, so it was somehow copied. And then a few days later, the credit card company sent me a new credit card, and it was delivered to my front door by UPS, and it had the information in it to activate it for some reason, and it was stolen within an hour. I was home at the time, and I understand that some people troll behind UPS trucks for these types of things. And my card was used up to $2,000 worth at the Fred Meyer here in town and in Soldotna before anything was stopped, and I couldn't reach the credit card company over the weekend. And I did call APD, but nothing ever came of it. Is it just that there's too much of it to ever follow up?
Well, what I would say for that case, the New York part of it, we would not ever follow up. That's some kind of data
course.
Breach. As far as the people who are actually using your credit cards, that to me seems like a viable case because we would probably have them on video. It would be then a matter of identifying the people. But I don't know if you know that right now, Anchorage Police Department, I think it's okay for me to say this, our numbers are way down right now. A matter of fact, in our detective division, we used to have 3 to 4 theft detectives. They have stood down that particular division because we don't have enough detectives to cover theft. We had 5 fraud detectives, financial crimes detectives, of which I am one. We have 3 now, and I am assigned to a federal task force with the IRS criminal investigation, so I'm kind of part-time working cases. So I think we have 3 or 4 burglary detectives, and these are property crimes that would handle these types of cases. So it's not that we just don't do your case. It's just a matter of we have a lot of cases to do, and we can only do so much. And I'm not sure where your case stands at this time, but to me, that seems like a case that would be workable because of the fact that Fred Meyer, we're going to be able to try to figure out who these people are. We might not know who they are, but we have ways of potentially finding out. So I would just call the Anchorage Police Department again and see about your case. But like I said, we can only do so much, and I think we do a good job at doing what we do.
Yeah.
But we are limited in some respects in our resources.
Denise, did you give us a time frame on that?
Yes, this just happened a month and a half ago, and I do have a case number, and I have called a few times, and I'm just told that they're just too understaffed. And the other thing is, how can someone use 20 times at the local Fred Meyer here on Northern Lights without them catching on? Is there no safety from the store's perspective?
I'm not sure.
And how did they use a credit card without any ID?
Well, that happens all the time, actually. So I'm not, you know, there's a lot of as many ways as you can think for someone to commit a crime. They've already thought of it. They've thought of more things. Maybe the clerk is in cahoots with them, you know. So they went through. I mean, it's hard to say. And the other thing, I think, as far as placing where your case would come on a priority basis, is because of I don't know who your credit card company is, but I would consider using a credit card company that might have a little bit more due diligence. But for them to leave it out there unsecure like that with the instructions, and
that's shocking. Yeah.
And they're also going to probably take the hit for the $2,000-some-odd. You're not going to have to pay for that. So when Anchorage Police Department looks at the cases, they say, well, you're going to be made whole. And yes, we have some criminals out there, and we're probably already chasing them for something else. When we have to prioritize, we're going to say, well, you're going to be made whole. You're going to get a new credit card. And so that factors into our decision making, I'm sure. And that's all we can do at the moment.
And it was Alaska Airlines. It was National Bank of America, believe it or not. Now, thank you
Bank of America is very huge, and so some of these things can slip through the cracks, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I sort of feel like I always get an alert when something's happening because I get a new credit card, and they tell me there's been a breach of some sort. So and maybe it hasn't affected. I don't know how close that got to me, but it affected somebody, and I have a new card.
I had two years in a row they just proactively issued me a new credit card because of some breach, one of the credit cards that I have, and it was... It seemed the 2 years that they did it, it was like within 1 week of me going out of the country for a vacation. And so I'm trying to hurry up and get this credit card because I'm leaving for a couple of weeks and I need this credit card. And yeah. Now here we are. And then also it's a pain for us because so many of us have auto pay right directly to our credit card. So every time they change your credit card,
yes,
you have to go back to all your merchants that you're paying paying your utilities or whatever automatic payments are coming out of your credit
yes.
card every month, your
yeah.
Alaska Club or whatever it is, and you have to go back to all these companies and
do you do
give
that?
Them your...
Do you do those auto pays? I mean, from your perspective, is that okay to do, or is it just an inconvenience?
I do not have any auto pays
because of the world.
That might be. Maybe I have a little bit more
savvy. Your antenna are out there. I'm going to welcome Alex to the show. This is Hometown Alaska. Oh. Alex, welcome.
Hi. How are you doing?
Very good.
So I have a suggestion. When you were talking earlier about what you keep in your purse and you don't keep a bunch of different cards and your social security number in your purse.
Uh-huh.
Well, I guess my suggestion to not lose that kind of stuff is I put my ID, my credit card, and my cash in my right front pocket every time. I don't carry a wallet because I know that I'll never lose that, and I never have lost it out of my pocket. So my suggestion to all the ladies that like to have everything in their purse, because I've known a lot of people who've lost their wallets and their purse, is just to keep their important stuff in their pocket.
Well, that's a good suggestion. I don't carry a purse personally. It might be because I also have to carry a gun, but I mean, it just doesn't go together.
Doesn't seem fit.
No, yeah. But I don't know how we're going to change culture in the women who do carry their purses,
yeah.
But that have everything in the
yeah. You know,
I
read one news story
sink
of,
in it.
Of a identity theft ring that was targeting childcare centers where mothers were leaving their purses in the car while they were delivering their children to daycare, thinking that no one would ever bother. You know. You just really have to almost have a detective or a criminal mindset to think about the ways that you're vulnerable. So, but thank you, Alex. That's a great suggestion, and it does sound like a bit of a culture shift that we need to do. I'm going to welcome Susie on Hometown Alaska. Hi, Susie.
Hey, good afternoon. I'm really happy you guys are doing this particular segment. I had two suggestions.
Okay.
The first one is don't ever. Ever, did I say ever, get a debit card that's linked to your bank account. Those are, I was working in banking compliance in the mid-1990s, and debit cards were easy to swipe and drain accounts from in the 90s, and the technology has not improved. You either write a check, get a credit card, or do bill pay on your checking account, but don't ever get a debit card because that is the easiest one to scam. And the second one is, if somebody calls asking for money and they'll say, oh, I'm going to make it really easy for you. You can do it by credit card right on the phone right now. You say, I don't ever, ever, ever give my credit card over the phone.
Mm-hmm. You're getting a lot of shaking yes heads in the studio. I want to ask Michelle about the debit card because, Michelle, you don't carry a credit card. You carry a debit card.
I do.
So what do you think?
Well, what you do with a debit card is, at least with my banking institution, I don't have... what you call the, if you overdraw your account.
Overdraw
you can go,
protection.
So what is in my debit card is the most that anybody can steal from me. And I do sort of what you call I just move money into that debit card.
As you need.
Into
transfer.
The account as I need.
Transfer.
So
yeah.
I don't keep just an unlimited amount of money. It's not linked to another account where they can drain me. So they're going to get what they're going to get that's right in there. On every, you know, every couple of weeks, there's a, a certain some amount in that.
So you have to be savvy about your debit card, too.
Right. Yeah. The debit card is convenient. It is. It does have less protections than a credit card. So it is because the entire balance of your account that's linked to it is at risk.
Yeah.
So you just have to decide what your at-risk factor is
right.
and be aware that
right.
there is a difference between the debit card. I would never use a debit card to do an online purchase.
Uh-huh.
I know some people, they, well, let me get my debit card out, and they're starting to punch it in. I'm like, what are you doing?
But
there's a difference between debit and credit cards, and they each have their purpose. You just have to understand what those differences are, and then, like I said, just determine what your level of risk is to to use it.
You know, thinking about, you can bill pay through a lot of banking. You can auto bill, auto pay through your bank. The only convenience I can think there is that you only have to go one place when you have to, you know, give them a new, I mean, I wonder if there's extra protection there. Are they?
Anytime you don't have to write a check or expose a number, because the check has your account number on it. So once
right.
you utter that check to somebody, that number is out there. You don't know how other businesses are handling your personal information. Where does that check go?
Yeah.
Until it gets back to the bank and it's destroyed.
Yeah.
And then the check 21 images are made of the checks, and then they're out there as well. So I'm not saying don't use checks. I'm just saying you have to be aware of what where you're sending that check. And in any time, any business that has your information, for me, I've seen people fax in. They give you an option to pay and write your credit card number and your three-digit code and your expiration date on this and fax it off. And okay, that's fine. You keep your side of the fax, but somebody's got the other side, a copy of that fax. And what are they going to do with that piece of paper? Are they going to put it in a file? I did a case a few years ago where several people had been victims of identity theft. Credit cards had been obtained and merchandise was being delivered. And the common denominator between all these victims was a landscaping company.
Oh.
One of their employees, so they had given their credit card company. So when the landscaping company went out and did their lawns, they would then, as they did their jobs, they would
bill
the credit card. But these credit card numbers were in a file in a drawer in an office. And were they secure? I don't know, but it didn't matter in this case because it was an employee who had
an
gotten
inside job.
Exactly, who had access to all these credit card numbers and the name and your address and all the
all
things
the things
that you
that
need
make it look legitimate.
To obtain a credit card.
Wow, that you know, I have a question. I wanted to ask you. I'd certainly heard about when you're on your computer, use one browser that you don't use for anything else to check your bank. And so that makes sense to me. And I'm thinking about how easy it is for us to be at the Saturday market or something like that. And everybody's got an iPhone with one of those squares on it. And it's so easy to make a purchase. But do you know anything about how safe your credit card information is when you swipe something like that?
I don't have a lot of. I was hoping if Glenn was here, he would be able to talk about that. But I am familiar with Square. Actually, we had to use it here recently for Women Police of Alaska. We did a silent auction, and it was very convenient for everybody who made a bid to be able to take. One of the people had a Square, and that money went into the account for another nonprofit. And from what I understood, it would. Once it went in, it would encrypt it or it would go away, supposedly. But I don't know how it goes away.
We'll
and I'm not sure of all that technology.
Yeah,
but
Glenn shows up, we'll push that question onto him. But if you're joining us and you're getting interested in this conversation, we're talking about identity theft. And we're such a digital culture at this point that our numbers are us, I guess. And we want to raise your awareness of where your vulnerability points are. So Michelle Logan is in the studio with me. She's a detective with the Financial Crimes Unit. And we are hoping we're going to have Glenn Klinkart with us in the second half hour to talk a little bit more about cyber exposure. So this is Kathleen McCoy, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska.
On the next morning edition, a political fight over banks and wealth, and a historic fight between a famous artist and his wealthy patron.
Leyland had received letters from Whistler talking about the gorgeous surprise that Whistler was preparing.
It was an artwork his patron considered so surprising he didn't want to pay for it. Find out how James Whistler got his revenge on the next morning edition from NPR News.
Tomorrow morning from 5 until 9 on KSKA Anchorage.
Thank you.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 9 on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen on alaskapublic.org.
The next Outdoor Explorer has important information about air quality and lung health for outdoor athletes. I'm Charles Woolforth. I'm a lifelong asthma sufferer, and I learned a lot from our guests. In the first half, we have representatives from the Air Quality Program and Lung Association here in Anchorage. In the second half, a Fairbanks lung doctor who is also an avid cycler and skier. You'll come away with some concrete information that every athlete needs to protect lungs. Join us Thursday at 2, repeating at 9 on KSKA Anchorage.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. This is Kathleen McCoy, and our topic today is identity theft. We've had some awesome callers who called up with both advice and experience, and we hope to hear from some more of you. I'm going to give you our number, 550-8433-1-888-353-5752, and we can take emails at hometown@alaskapublic.org. Michelle Logan, detective with the APD Financial Crimes Unit, is in the studio with us. Very familiar with standing up in front of people and telling them about the dangers and the exposures to their identity. So we wanted to jump back in. Were you, Michelle, interested in talking about identity theft versus identity fraud, or do you want to start with something else?
Well, that came up.
Yeah.
The difference between identity theft and identity fraud. And basically, identity theft is the action of stealing of the information. However, that we've talked about many ways that,
yes,
that information
exposed
is stolen.
Yeah.
So that would be the theft. And then when we talk about identity fraud, that is then the unauthorized use of another's personal information to achieve an illicit financial gain. So mm-hmm. the taking of that information then in order to make some kind of economic transaction to better, you know, to steal, basically.
Yeah.
You know, we use a lot
of
different
stealing
words, but we're just talking about good old thieves is what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
And using the fraudulent methods to
tools
to
change,
get that.
But the behavior stays the same. So let's see, you said you had some sense of numbers and where we're seeing it in Anchorage, whether it's computer use or, so go ahead and jump into some of that.
Well, there's a online consulting company, javelinstrategy.com, and a few years ago they had listed some percentages that might kind of debunk some of what people think, that most of their identity theft was because of their computer software or, you know, their they didn't have the proper computer antivirus software or something like that. But at one point a few years ago, about 38% of identity theft was the old-fashioned way, lost, stolen wallets, checks, and credit cards. Or here in Anchorage, we see a lot of car break-ins. And if I can plug it here, it's getting to be summer. People are going to be parking at the trailheads, the doggy parks, and
even
you just cannot leave your stuff in your car. You just can't.
Even if
don't
it's
take
not
it
visible.
With you. If you can take your driver's license, put it in your front pocket.
Uh-huh.
Yes, even if it's visible or not visible. I mean, if you go to a movie, there'll be people watching the theater parking lot. As soon as you pull in and park and you get out and you go in the movie theater, how long is it going to be before you get out?
A good hour and a half at
least. 2 hours.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So they break into your car. I mean, huge parking lots. They break in your car and they take your credit card. They find your wallet under the seat, in the glove box, wherever, in the console. And now they've got an hour, hour and a half to go to Fred
Shopping
Meyer,
mm-hmm.
Walmart, anywhere, and just, you know, use your credit cards before you even discovered that you've been a victim
mm-hmm.
of theft. So
we see that here. You said
yes.
Trailheads, doggy parks,
yes.
So parking lots for theaters.
Stealing your information that way, the mail theft, which we've talked about that already. But the other thing, cases that I have done where the person has had someone actually assume their identity and open accounts or even get jobs, get a job because they had a bad driving history, DUIs, they couldn't get a job with, say, FedEx, so they would take,
someone's identity.
Their brother or somebody, a friend or an acquaintance or a relative, because who do you know the best? Who do you know, your brother or sister? You know their mother's, you know your mother's maiden name. You know your addresses. You know their date of birth. Or a former boyfriend or girlfriend or an ex-spouse, somebody who might not have the best, you know, feelings for you at this time. We saw about 15% of that could have been due to people that you know. So you have to be very vigilant with your information. And retail credit purchases, of course, the breaches that we've seen here in the last few years with Target, Home Depot, accounted for maybe 15%. But at one point, computer virus and hackers, 8% of total identity theft. But like I said, the most common way is the old-fashioned way. However, here in the last year, in 2013 is the year we have the most recent statistics.
Most recent stats, yeah.
According to Javelin Strategy and Research, 44% of all fraud involved an online transaction. So it's becoming increasingly...
It's growing again.
Yes, it is. And increasingly, the fraudsters are using Amazon, eBay, and PayPal. And how prevalent is eBay and PayPal and Amazon? I mean,
I can pick up
my phone and my stuff is in my phone. I could just buy something on Amazon and never...
On their app.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So you just have to be very aware.
Yeah.
And of course, the best way to be aware is, people ask me all the time, should I sign up for these services that will alert me on my credit and pay $49.99 a month to have this service? And I think you can do it for free. I think if you just vigilantly check your credit report every three or four months and look for yourself if there's any items on there that aren't yours. Exactly.
Uh-huh.
Or detrimental items that don't belong to you.
Yeah.
And then the credit agencies are very good at explaining how you need to then deal with those items if they're not yours.
Right. And I'm going to welcome Kristen on to Hometown Alaska. Hi, Kristen, and thanks for waiting for your chance to talk.
Thank you, and thank you for such a great topic.
Good.
I recently discovered the name on my mortgage was changed to someone else's name. A call to a manager at the 800 number revealed that it was a change made by a branch. They were in the process of identifying if that branch was even in Alaska. I was just wondering if the APD financial detectives have run into this.
What do you think, Michelle?
I'm a working detective. I don't screen in all the reports that come in
incoming
every day. So I'm not sure if we have had something like that.
Have you heard of that in the past?
Not specifically, no. Mm-hmm. I can see that it could happen. And definitely you would want to get to the bottom of what has happened there. You're saying that your name was changed on your mortgage?
Correct. And when I called the managers, they were appalled. They said they had no idea. They were going to get to the bottom of it. And... you know, it's kind of like reverse identity theft. But then I'm wondering, well, where did my name go, and how is that affecting my 1098 at the end of the year and my credit score?
Have you tried to get a copy of your credit report at this point?
I haven't recently.
Okay, that's the first thing you need to do. And
okay,
the website that you're going to use is annualcreditreport.com.
Okay.
That's a government website. Every year since, I think since 2003 or so, it used to be you had to pay to get your credit report, $9. And it's like, why am I paying for my own information? But finally, a few years ago, Congress passed a law that said that we were entitled to get one copy from each of the three credit bureaus to get a copy of our credit report free every year. And those three credit bureaus are Experian, TransUnion, and
Equifax.
And all of them, it's very easy, Equifax.com, Experian.com, TransUnion.com. But what you want to do is go to annualcreditreport.com. It'll ask you questions that are very specific to you, like what is your mortgage payment every month, or some of those, what year did you obtain your car loan, or some of those things. And since you can get one free credit report from each of the three credit bureaus, you can get one every 3 months or every 4 months. That would be three a year, one from each. So get one from TransUnion, get one from Equifax, get one from Experian. They should have very similar information. But the first thing you need to do, and I would do it today, is get on there and get one of your free credit reports and see what kind of activity, if any, is on there regarding that mortgage or anything else. And then, of course, the financial, you say your financial institution, your mortgage company is here locally?
Well, it's Wells Fargo, and I called the 800 number, and they are saying it happened at a branch, and
okay.
You know, I'm thinking a branch in Missouri. I mean, who knows?
Okay, well, if they're, you know, hopefully they're working with you on it, I would even maybe go into a local branch, too, with this information and get it going and find out, get to the bottom of that. It can be fixed. It can be a headache in the meantime that you might be in for, but you can definitely get it fixed.
Kristen, thank you. I'm going to move on to another caller just because the board is lighting up and we've got these great experts here, and I want to pass get their information out. But thank you so much. I'd like to welcome Lauren onto Hometown Alaska. Hi, Lauren.
Hey, how are you?
Just great. How are you?
I'm well. I just wanted to share just a couple of experiences and some feedback based on some other items folks had shared. But I heard a caller mention that Bank of America was the Alaska Airlines card they were using. They had some problems with it. And my wife, actually, a couple of years ago, we were living up in Nome, and she got a call from Bank of America, and they wanted to know if she had been in New York City 2 days prior at a record store, and following that, had purchased a business class airfare flight for one to Dubai, and then also two nights at a deluxe 5-star hotel in Dubai for
$4,000. That's a nightmare.
And she said no, and they said, "Well, you know, no problem. We caught that on our fraud. It looks like that. You know, they basically took the hit." And so I just would reiterate that there's actually a lot of federal protection that may have been discussed earlier, but consumers are often protected under some of the federal laws as to electronic transfers that they don't authorize. And so in that case, in our experience, Bank of America said, you know, we're canceling the card. Thank you very much. And we got a new card set as a result. No loss there. The same can be said for debit cards. If you have transactions, you know, there might be you have to be vigilant about looking at your accounts. You can't just ignore it. But you know, if a transaction comes through that you don't recognize, you can either call the 800 numbers or go into the local branch. And generally speaking, there may be a process you have to go through, but there would be an immediate refund with the financial institutions typically taking the brunt of the risk up front, unless it's determined that there was some fault of your own there.
That is reassuring, and we do have a lot of calls, Lauren. Do you have any other questions you want to ask or pose? And then I need to move on to another call.
No, that was just what I wanted to share. And the last comment is, you know, we're talking a lot about ourselves, but a lot of times elders are certainly at risk. Our older members that might be online a little bit, and they fall at risk for some of these items too.
Good point.
Want to be vigilant there.
Good point.
Elders are definitely a vulnerable class, as well as military who are deployed. And then I would say the third would be children who have not yet, they have a Social Security number, but it's going to be several years, 15, 18 years down the road. And those are pristine Social Security numbers that identity thieves would like to get their hands on.
Yeah.
So it's very important to help guard that too.
I want to welcome, by the way, I want to let folks know Glenn Klinkhardt is in the studio with us. He rushed in. He's breathing calmly now.
I did it legally. I did not violate any laws trying to get here as quickly as I could. So
and,
thank you.
If you have questions related to computer security, we now have someone here who's very used to answering those questions. So don't hesitate to call 550-8433. But right now, I'd like to welcome Kate onto Hometown Alaska. Hi, Kate.
Hi. Yeah, we were victims of IRS tax identity theft. Our accountant went to file our taxes electronically and got a notice within 24 hours that there had already been a filing under those Social Security numbers.
Yes.
So she got all the paperwork together, which we have submitted and sent off. But my question is, with, you know, underfunding of the IRS through Congress, what can you do? Like, you can't talk to a real person back there. Is there anyone there that's monitoring this sort of stuff? And a side question is, I hear that there's a lot of this going on in Anchorage right now, possibly related to the Primera hack earlier in the year. Can you comment on this?
I'm a federal task force officer for the IRS. So I work with some IRS agents, and they are actively, they do actively investigate local IRS tax fraud. We saw some of it had started in some of the prisons where the prisoners, it was very rampant there. They were using fellow prisoners and baby mamas of prisoners and using all their information and doing this tax fraud. They've even seen it where on a romance scam, a woman meets a man online in another country. He finally gets around to saying, can you open an account for me in case I come to the United States? She opens the account, unbeknownst to her. The account starts filling up with money that is actually tax refund money. And so they have worked some cases, and they do work. I know there's some cases right now, a union, there were some breaches, and several people in this union had IRS. And even myself, as I go to press the button to file online, I'm holding my breath. Is it going to tell me that I've already filed? Mm-hmm. And last year, I waited till like August, September to file, so I was really concerned. Yeah. But it's something that the IRS is working on. They're very aware of it. They are working. They're building a cybercrime unit. They're investigating. Let's see. 3 years ago, less than 3% of their time was spent on identity theft cases across country, but now they're working at about 18%. And it's become a priority for the IRS, and they are requesting funding to help
Were you assigned recently to this, to be an IRS?
I'm a task force officer with them, but I don't do tax related.
Oh, okay.
I do other
types of
currency
crimes. I was going to ask you whether the Primera breach is what, you know, created that for you.
I don't think that was where that started. It's okay. Hard to say where that breach is. However, the one IRS agent did reassure me that for the IRS tax fraud, that's usually when they do get your information, that's all they're doing with it, is trying to get refunds. Yeah. Uh-huh. They're not really then trying to get car loans and house loans and uh-huh. credit cards and things like that.
Just trying to get your refunds.
So right. You have mm-hmm. to work with the IRS to, unfortunately it's a pain, but you work mm-hmm. with them and get it resolved.
Is there a local IRS place you can go to, or this is all?
36 and Old Seward. It's okay. Where the CHM 2 Hill building is on the first floor. There's a service center where you can actually go in, take a number, and see a person.
Yeah. Okay. What we've been seeing is at least not so much from the Primera, but the good old stealing your tax form that you've put in your mailbox to go out.
Oh, not even just the online
so it's very,
filing.
It starts low tech, and then once they have that, it's easy enough to buy a copy of TurboTax, and then they fill it up for the information they want. Then they hit send. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing some of that. So in some cases, I'm recommending people to actually file online or have your tax person do it online.
I know I've heard file early. Before someone else can get
there you
to
go.
It.
Yeah, we had actually a PFD scam not too long ago that would have to do with if I can get in, get an application ahead of you, I win.
Uh-huh. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Kate. I'm going to welcome Jordan onto the program. Welcome, Jordan, to Hometown Alaska.
Hey, good afternoon. I'm all the way from Tennessee.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Okay.
What part of Tennessee? That's my home state.
Oh.
Yeah, my name is Jordan Ralph, actually. I'm over in Prevail, Tennessee, quite a big metropolis.
Oh, the home of Pick Sweet Vegetables.
Get out of here.
Pick Sweet Vegetables, you got it.
That's awesome.
Okay, so, oh, man. Jordan, how are you listening to our show? On the computer? Streaming?
Yes, I am.
Okay, cool.
Wonderful.
Streaming online.
All right.
Amazing things you can do. I guess I want to call in. It's really great to hear the discussion from seasoned veterans. But I kind of want to call in with the online shopping experience. It seems like it's kind of about to take over, the world in a sense, where it's becoming more convenient, more cheap, more easy. Everything's in stock. You know when it's in stock. It seems like the easiest route to take. So being an avid debit card user, hearing the earlier discussion about debit card being a less safe option online, and Michelle, you actually said, what are you doing when someone's entering a debit card online? I actually do this. And so I'm wondering, what kind of steps did I take, or what advice might you offer to help me to avoid identity theft in the future?
Well, a credit card, I would apply and get a credit card, and maybe two credit cards, one for all your online purchases and then one for other things. But credit cards offer more protection, and the banks are looking at your purchase history. Like these people that called in said, well, somebody, were you in New York and Dubai when you live in Nome, Alaska? They're able to look at your pattern, and they can mm-hmm. actually be proactive, whereas your debit card is just your cash bank account, and everything that's in that account is exposed. And you're not guaranteed to only have a $50 to zero liability if it is hacked somehow. So I would suggest getting a couple of different credit cards and use your debit card just for your right there in your hometown, gasoline, you know, those sorts of things.
And put transfer only the amount of money into it that you actually want.
Keep as much money in your the account that's attached to your debit card as you're willing to lose.
To lose.
Yeah. Things have kind of changed. It used to be the advice I think we used to give was, you know, have your checking account and have your one card. But nowadays, because of the way things have changed, as Jordan was saying, it seems strange for us to be telling you have multiple credit cards. Now, with that comes the responsibility. With great power comes great responsibility. So right. You have to check those. But to have one that's just for online, just for business, just for, you know, the personal, because unfortunately the United States has about 75% of all the world's credit card theft, you're going to have those problems. Even if they just batch say we're going to cancel all these because we don't know if they've been stolen. And we know what it's like to be somewhere on, you know, on vacation and have your credit card canceled because they want to make sure that. So by having multiple credit cards,
is a safeguard.
You do eliminate that. At least you're inconvenienced only a little bit, as opposed to a very big inconvenience. The problem is though, now you're asking people to have to, you know, who may not be even balancing their checkbook to try and watch and balance a couple different credit cards. Mm-hmm. So it's a catch 22. Mm-hmm. But again, you're minimizing your risk.
Mm-hmm. You know, we were talking about those swipes, those little white squares, and there's other versions of them.
Yeah.
How secure is your information when you swipe?
Actually, they're very good. It's one of those things where, you know, of course, it's only as good as the person you're giving your credit card to. But we actually test a lot of those systems to test their veracity. And the new ones, the new black ones that the square has, as well as some of the other ones, the moment that's swiped, we've actually done tests. As soon as that goes through and it hits the phone, the tablet, or the system, it is encrypted. We've tried to actually get into it, some of the researchers that I work with. Mm-hmm. But we test that. Then while it's there, is it encrypted? And then when it actually moves, is it encrypted? Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, businesses have learned the hard way, including businesses here in Alaska, that they have a system that isn't been updated, doesn't have the encrypted, or isn't even going now to the new cards with the chip on the card, which is a whole nother thing.
Right.
You know, which is nice. Eventually, we're all going to get there. I mean, when England went to it, I think their fraud dropped by 75% because then all the bad guys started going, well, we're going to go after the Americans and their magnetic stripes.
We called them all back.
Yes.
So I'm going to throw out our number one more time because we can probably take a few more questions, but then I really want to go to you, Glenn, and you know, talk to us a little bit about computer security. I'm thinking coffee shops and people, you know. So, but if you've got another question, give us a call at 550-8433, 1-888-353-5752 around the state. Or we can take an email at hometowninalaskapublic.org. So tell us what are you seeing happening here? What, you know, what advice do you have for people who love to go to a coffee shop and just sit there and shop?
Well, the first thing I think is you have to know your risks. And a lot of people don't even know what their risk is.
Right.
So, in fact, I just finished a class last week for a company that asked me to come in and talk to their employees. And we talked about coffee shops. And I tell people is, do you realize that when you go to a coffee shop and you're using their free wireless, you are swimming in the same pool, if you will, the water or the stream, as everybody else who's in that room. So they can see what you're doing. And with the right equipment, which we often will play with in my line of work to test it and test systems, they can see where you're going online. They can see these things. And so it's one of those things that you have to be aware. So it's one thing to sit down at a coffee shop and maybe Facebook, maybe do a couple things here and there. But I wouldn't necessarily say to myself, do I want to risk doing my banking right here,
In case
transferring large sums of cash, or doing things that are, you know, dealing with intellectual property, or doing things that are important to me.
Yeah.
It's one thing just to check your email. At the same time, you know, it's convenient.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. I mean, convenience is very seductive.
Well,
I mean,
convenience is not secure.
Yeah,
that's
convenience is not secure. It's seductive but not secure.
Yes.
I'm going to welcome Katie onto Hometown Alaska. Hi, Katie.
Oh, hi there.
Hi.
I was calling because I had a weird occurrence where I did a free creditreport.com run my credit a long time ago. And I did it on an old backup credit card because it was older and I thought maybe, I don't know, I didn't know how it worked. I thought I'd have better credit if I ran it on that. And anyway, I didn't check the fine print and they were charging me monthly for a free creditreport.com check. that I didn't realize they were going to do it monthly over and over again. And because it was an old card and I did, you know, the environmentally friendly billing, I wasn't checking my bills and my credit report got ruined because I wasn't paying bills for months and months and months. And thankfully, it was like 7 years ago, so it just got wiped off my credit. But
I definitely tell people annualcreditreport.com. Freecreditreport.com is a commercial site, and I try to steer people away from that. The commercials you see on TV where they're singing in the basement, you know, I love my girlfriend, I've married my girlfriend, but I didn't know my girlfriend had bad credit, so we live with her parents. That's the freecreditreport.com commercial. Annualcreditreport.com is definitely the government site that you want to go to.
We will add that. We will add that to the Hometown Alaska list of links so that we can refer people to that. Sorry about that experience, Katie, but thanks for sharing it because maybe you'll save somebody else from that experience. I'd like to welcome Veronica onto Hometown Alaska.
Hi. I was told that if you have a credit card and you have to hand it to a server or a cashier and they have to walk away and then bring it back, if you scratch out the three-digit code on the back, that will help prevent fraud because they won't be able to use the number without that three-digit code. Is that true?
Well, if they, a lot of sites will ask for the three-digit code.
Not everyone does. Not a website, but an actual person.
Well, the person is going to take those numbers in order to use it probably on a website. So if they don't have the three-digit code, that's going to make it difficult for them to use it. But the first thing I would say there, and I almost went to it earlier and I got sidetracked, is you need to always watch where you can't let a server walk away and out of sight with your credit card. There's a lot of different things that they can do with it. But a lot of the restaurants now have stations right there where you can see from your table where they're going to ring up your credit card or whatever. But you need to keep that thing in sight at all times. And I would almost say pay cash at a restaurant if you can. Glenn's got some horror stories on that. Yeah. But that's just what I would say. Well, once again, know your risks and make your decisions.
Yeah.
Okay.
Glenn and Michelle, we have about a minute. What's the most important thing we can tell people in about a minute and a half?
I think mine is take control of your own credit card, your own checking account. You are the best keeper of that. Don't think somebody else is going to take care of it for you. You have to do it yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I go back to common sense and also just know that businesses are willing to absorb an acceptable loss of fraud. So, I mean, convenience, we're paying for that, and you just have to be logical about where's this information, who's looking at it, where can it be lost.
Where's my exposure?
Exactly.
Yeah. How much risk am I willing to take?
Yeah, and we often just don't think that way. I mean, you guys are detectives.
We all think that way.
Now we all have to think that way.
Paranoia is the best.
Paranoia is a good state of mind. All right, well, thank you so much. Gosh, what a great show. Thank you to our listeners and especially to our callers who shared really interesting stories about their own identity theft experiences here in Alaska. A special thank you to our guests in the studio today, Michelle Logan, a detective in the APD Financial Crimes Unit, and Glenn Klinkhart, former APD cyber cop and now an information security consultant. Next week, I'll be back as your host on Hometown Alaska. Pat Yak is vice president of public media. Monica Goki is our web editor and audio engineer. Happy trails to you all, and thanks for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.